Hi, it's Francis Lamb, and welcome to Splendid Table Selects, our baby mini podcast where we share the interviews that really inspired us or taught us something new or just helped make us better cooks. Splendid Table Selects is brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, an employee-owned company offering organic, gluten-free, stone-ground products. For decades, they've been experts at making healthy taste amazing. Learn more about Bob's Red Mill's products at bobsredmill.com. All right, let's get to our show. So, I honestly don't remember which is the health silver bullet right now. You know, like the thing that we are supposed to avoid at all costs to make us live forever. Like, is it still corn syrup? Is it trans fats? Which thing is it? Anyway, like it always seems like we're just constantly pinging from one thing to the next as the thing that is bad for you. But I'm old enough to remember when fat wasn't just the diet target of the month, it was like a full decade. And TV fitness gurus were out there making it sound like you really had to tell your insurance company if you're going to butter your toast in the morning. But fat is not bad, especially since it's basically responsible for the flavor, appearance, and texture of most of the food you love. And so we had two food world superstars, Bizarre Foods host Andrew Zimmern and author Michael Ruhlman, on the show to have a little fat love fest. Check it out.
Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Michael.
I want to talk to you about schmaltz, my love. I'm a goy. I'm a wasp. And you come from a Jewish background. Did you have any experience with schmaltz when you were growing up?
I did. And, you know, so few non-Jews really get it. My parents divorced when I was 6 years old, and my grandmother was a force of nature. She had a teeny tiny New York City pre-war apartment that was smaller than the table that I'm sitting at. And the only place to put a 6, 7, 8-year-old boy who was wild and crazy like I was and keep an eye on them while she was cooking was to put me in a little chair at the end of her kitchen by the open window, and I would reach and pass her things and she would cook. I'd usually do a sleepover twice a month with my grandmother on a Saturday night, go over there, sleep over, and then Sunday morning we'd get up and she'd cook all day, and my father and his brother and all my cousins would fill up the house at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then I'd go home with my dad. And my grandmother kept 3 or 4 different types of fat in the house at all times, the most cooked with version being chicken fat. And her schmaltz, you know, she did it, you know, old school style with the onions, you know, making grievous. I mean, this woman was in a way, an impossible human being. She was good at really only two things. One was canasta. The other one was cooking. And she had the gift. People would taste her food, whether it was the, you know, her pickled tongue, her chopped chicken liver, her matzo ball soup, her roast chickens. I mean, these are her recipes are the ones that I still cook today. And I learned how to cook essentially hanging on to her apron strings. And when I think of her, I smell chicken fat in her apron because she would always wipe her hands. And she was about 6'1", 6'2", a very big woman. And when I was little, my face was right in the place in her apron where there were big, brown, splotchy, greasy leftovers of chicken fat. And to this day, I can't smell real schmaltz cooking without thinking of my grandmother.
Did you leave schmaltz then, as you grew up, as America became fat phobic and anything fat was bad? And did you abandon schmaltz?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, as you know, everyone was, you know, running around wanting to do cuisine minceur, cuisine vapeur. I mean, you know, everyone was trying to go light, go Mediterranean, almost obsessively eschewing anything that smacked of comfort food. I mean, it's one of the great things about getting older is perspective. And, you know, talking to young cooks, culinarians, writers and stuff like that, and reminding them that our obsession with comfort food was something that, you know, is relatively new. I remember telling my friends that, you know, where'd you go last night for dinner? I went to Sammy's Romanian in New York, a classic New York hangout where a big tub of schmaltz comes onto your table along with the ingredients to make an egg cream if you so desire. I mean, sort of the place that never stopped lionizing schmaltz. And people would look at me like I was crazy. Like, why would you go there? Why weren't you going to some, you know, Arizona 206 or, you know, JoJo right. had just opened? And I was like, well, I like that, but I still got to go to Sammy's Romanian. I can't stop. I mean, that was a once a week thing for me.
I'm glad to hear that. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on where we are now. Where does Schmaltz and unusual cooking fats, unusual ingredients, what place do they have now?
Well, people are cooking, I think, in a healthier, smarter way at home. I think, sadly, in America at the same time, eating well has become a class privilege. But the immediacy of food magazines, food television, touch more people and therefore expose more people to greater number of ideas. I remember 10 years ago when I, you know, left restaurants and left magazines, radio, you know, kind of left everything just to sort of create bizarre foods. I never had people talk to me about animal hearts or animal kidneys. It was rarefied air. Now I get 20 emails a day saying my local butcher shop doesn't carry this product. Where do I get it? I see pictures tagging me on Instagram. I see recipes in Food and Wine magazine for offal. I mean, I think that cooking with fats and cooking with you know, sort of a lust for these traditional foods has helped propel things like Schmaltz back into the public consciousness. I mean, you have to remember, chicken fat is a key ingredient in everyone's, you know, the hottest food in America right now, which is ramen, right? I mean, it has a liquid seasoning and a tare that includes chicken fat. The, you know, Inuit tribes and other Arctic tribes that I've spent time with use three or four different types of animal fat in their cooking, and they will actually drink an ounce of it at a time to superheat their bodies during the cold weather months, which is how we got attracted to our bodies need fat. It's, you know, I mean, that's where we get energy from. Fat's not an evil word. Fat is good. My favorite meal in the whole world is porcupine fat grilled over an open fire that I got a chance to eat with the Bushmen of the Kalahari.
What does porcupine fat taste
like?
Oh,
Michael, if there was one meal I could share with you, it would be porcupine fat. I'm not kidding. These are giant animals. They're 60, 70 pounds. These very, very small tribal peoples in a tiny corner of Botswana will actually crawl through the holes where the porcupine lives, spear them, drag them out by their tails, carry them back to where the boma is, the little cluster of huts where the family members live. The women will take all the quills off and use them for jewelry or for tools and for knitting and for a guide. They use them as a guide to make string because they're hollow. There is no hair on a porcupine. Those quills are the hair, and it gets cold in the desert at night. So it has an inch thick layer of fat. It's almost like pork belly all around its body with a thin striation of muscle because you need muscle to move those quills. They take the entire thing off like a fatty porcupine-shaped blanket. They just skin the whole thing right off. They boil the meat for like 3 days and make a soup till it's all falling apart, and then they take the bones and use the bones for tools and stuff. But they take the fat, they throw the fat over a beaten-down coal fire, pile more coals on top, and blacken it, char it crisp for about 20 minutes. The inside just gets soft and warm. They take it out, they cut it into squares, and they hand you your square. And I sat there with this in my hand, and I thought, I will never be able to eat this. And because it just, the whole process had stunned me. And then I took one bite, and I couldn't stop. It was the most delicious thing that I'd ever eaten. And it's actually the food that I think about the most, you know. It's moments like being in my grandmother's kitchen or eating porcupine fat with the Bushmen of the Kalahari that I can't possibly ever have again, and it kills me. You know, fat's used all over the world, and it's an incredible, incredible vehicle for creating other flavors and bringing other flavors into the pan. I think it's vastly overlooked.
Andrew, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure, Michael.
And thank you for connecting grilled porcupine fat in Botswana with your grandmother Schmaltz on the Upper West Side of Manhattan.
It's the same thing.
Exactly. It's the same thing.
You got it.
Andrew Zimmern is a chef and the creator and host of Bizarre Foods on the Travel Channel. Michael Ruhlman's latest book is Grocery, The Buying and Selling of Food in America. You can find Michael's complete guide to making schmaltz and Andrew's recipe for butter-fried chicken on our website, splendidtable.org. Splendid Table Selects is brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, who make a huge collection of flours and nut meals, from almond and coconut flour to organic all-purpose flour. Bob's offers both, you know, well-milled versions of everyday flours and lots of harder-to-find products. Their organic all-purpose flour is milled from high-quality wheat, and it's great in tender breads, cookies, and cakes. So I've been on a little babka tear lately, and I came across a recipe on our website for chocolate cinnamon babka by Irvin Lin, and it looks ridiculous. And when I get over my fear of braiding dough, I bet Bob's organic all-purpose flour would be perfect for it. You can find out more about Bob's Red Mill's products at bobsredmill.com. I'm Francis Lamb, and thank you again for listening to Splendid Table Selects.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.